Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast with Julian Castelli. Each week, we talk with senior tech leaders to explore stories and insights about the challenges involved with growing technology companies. We hope that these stories can help you become a better leader and help you navigate your own growth journey.
This is Julian Castelli. I'm the host of the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast, where each week I talk with inspirational entrepreneurs and leaders in the tech industry. Past guests have included CEOs and CXOs of great companies like Workfront, CHG Healthcare, Pathology Watch, InMoment, Canopy, the San Francisco 49ers, and many more. This episode is brought to you by Growth Elevated. We are a community of tech founders, CEOs, and CXOs who are committed to working together to share best practices and learnings in an effort to help all of us become better leaders. We do that through educational programs like this podcast and our annual tech summit in beautiful Park City, Utah. And if you're a skier and you enjoy working with other tech leaders, please check us out at growthelevated.com. Today, I am excited to welcome Tom Lenin to the program. Tom has had an exciting career that spent 25 years in the payments industry, payments, banking, and fintech. Tom has been an innovator in this space, and he's an electronic payments entrepreneur. He's leveraged his payment product expertise, business acumen, and his vast network of partners and strategic alliances to create a new company over the last 4 years called Westown Payments. And today, we're going to talk to Tom about his leadership journey. Tom, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Julian. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. And I'm looking forward to learning more about payments. Tell me about you've been in payments for a long time. Let's just really simply explain, you know, the payments business. This is when people charge credit cards, right? You help enable merchants and people who sell things to use digital payments. That's the basic of your business and your expertise, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Awesome. And so you've been doing this for 20 plus years, but now you've launched a new business called Westown Payments. When did you launch that?
Launched it in July of 2020.
Awesome. And is that a complete startup?
It's a complete startup. Absolutely.
Okay. And so that was 4 or 5 years ago. And where are you today?
Well, you know, we started it in July 2020, which of course dead center in the middle of the pandemic. And we've now grown that business to approximately 12 million annual volume and have a little over a dozen team members and, you know, have really seen elevated growth in the last year and a half since we've settled into our new bank environment.
Congratulations. That's fantastic. So what made you want to start your own thing? Was this your first entrepreneurship? You started a new company from scratch and you were the leader?
Nope. This is actually my fourth company. Okay. Was fortunate enough to exit out of the previous three. And each time we start anew, we have a little bit of a different business model focus. Certainly the environment changes every time. But we've been fortunate to find a market, a product market fit and a path to exit.
And what was your thesis for this one to start a new business in 2020?
Sure. So, you know, in 25 years, in this case, at that point is 20 years of experience. It experienced a tremendous amount of frustration with the layers and layers of people and or organizations that are involved in the payment industry. It is very much like an onion. And so what I thought and part of my thesis was that if I can get to the highest level, which is the bank, even above Visa, MasterCard, the banks control the market, then I can actually go after some of these markets and opportunities that I've seen or attempted to do previously as a called third party, assuming that we could create that kind of alignment where they would actually be part of the company, they'd either invest in it, sit on the board, equity partner, then we would be able to achieve on these goals that previously were behind some kind of curtain or wall that we couldn't access.
Right. Got it. And was Westown Bank your partner that you used to kind of test that thesis?
Absolutely. Westown Bank was, I mean, I don't want to say the number of banks that I approached before they.
Well,
how
hard was that? I mean, that's the innovation, right? You wanted to have a bank be part of it. So it wasn't just as easy as the first person you asked to say, sure, I'll try it.
Yeah, I wish that was the case. If it was, then everyone would be doing it. No, you know, you obviously have personalities, you have history, you also have, you know, I don't want to do this because I don't want to lose my job, but it sounds really good. All those things factor in. With Westtown Bank, they were already in a market that we knew we could service if we had previously. And we also knew that it was a growing market that really didn't have service providers that understood its challenges. And so we met them, I met the COO. Her name is Melissa Marcel. She is an amazing person and an even better business person. And actually, Julian, our first pitch meeting was March 2020, which of course, you know, the world shut down March 14th.
So you're starting a new venture and COVID kind of runs right into you like a truck.
Exactly. And I thought this would be the shortest pitch meeting ever. In reality, their interest was already galvanized because of what they saw in the market. And as we talked about, you know, what I was hoping to achieve and then what they were hoping to achieve was so perfectly aligned. They said, let's do it. And I was as shocked as anybody that we got the yes. And then it was, you know, off to the races.
But yes. Okay. So first big achievement, you know, you get the bank partner, which is amazing. After how many people do you think you talked to get that done?
Really get in front of the board of directors to that level, 6 banks.
Okay.
Another dozen that you do the dance and then you realize, okay, this is going nowhere.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was
a process. How long did that process take you to find that partner?
A couple of years. I would say we started in like 18. I started in 18, did some consulting work, actually got inside of a couple banks, realized, you know, that this is really a challenge. And then, then started spreading out from there, looking for other community banks that weren't yet in payments, but wanted to be, you know, like the revenue, like the fee income, and you know, maybe didn't have the expertise in-house. And that's what we bring to that. Yeah.
And you're doing that solo, a solopreneur at that point? And then when did you start hiring out people after you got the partnership with the bank?
Yeah. So our first hire, I want to say, was in, you know, the summer, just after we launched. And that was really like a right-hand person. And then we started hiring some, we'll call it high-level staff that understood payments at a, you know, probably to a level even I don't fully understand, which is the most valuable part of any business is the people you can attract.
All right. So you get the bank, you got your first couple of employees, and then COVID hits. Talk to me about that. How did that impact your business?
Actually, just the opposite. So COVID hit first, and we're building this thing in quarantine.
You started this during COVID. Wow.
During COVID, like during the very beginning of COVID, where the world was as, you know, the uncertainty was at paramount. But the bank, I think, had enough confidence that, okay, you know, there will be a future. There will be something after this. It's not Armageddon. And we have a moment to build while everyone is hunkered down. And I'll tell you this, the interesting thing is, so it took us 4 months to get the Illinois state regulators to basically sign off on the opportunity because it's a new business line for a bank. And any new business line a bank opens, they have to get, it's not approval, by the way, they have to basically get a letter that says, we don't deny your request, which is always fun. So that's the environment. So that happened in July. And from July to November, we built the entire infrastructure. I got all the licenses from the card brands. I got the payment rails set up. So 4 months. And just to give you an idea, that normally takes anywhere from 12 to 24 months. So we hustled through. I think part of it was our knowledge, experience, and doing it. And so we knew how to do it and do it quickly. The other part was everyone was sitting at home. No one was traveling.
So you're launching all this. Yeah. And it wasn't normal like it is now, no. Right? So that must have been.
I wouldn't be able to do this in 4 months. It would take a solid year, if not longer, and probably much, much, much longer, frankly.
Got it. Okay. So you built this business while we're all sitting at home binge watching that Tiger show, whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're building a business. Okay. So when did you know that you kind of, you had something and it was going to work? What was one of some of your critical first milestones?
You know, I'll tell you, we went to a conference in April of 2021. So this is literally when the world, while we were at the conference, the US lifted the face mask ban, right? So this is how early this was. So we go to this conference, we're sitting there and people walked up. And the first question was, well, you're a sales office, ISO, independent sales organization. We said, no, we're part of the bank. And they stop and go, wait, what? And you're here? And then the conversation started rolling. We went, okay, this is exactly what we thought would happen at some level, but not in such a visceral, like you're the bank talking to me right now. You're here at this conference. You're meeting us where we are. And that's when we looked at each other and said, okay, this is interesting. We got something here.
Yeah, because that was unique, right? And
typically, usually you're talking to some company, you know, with a nondescript name that is, you know, is representing some bank as a contract.
One of their many.
Exactly.
You know,
but
agents,
they're not
right?
The decision maker. They're not the ones who say, yeah, I can do this. And one of the markets we started in that was highly regulated and incredibly misunderstood was the hemp and CBD market.
Okay.
And so mind you, this is now 2020. Well, 2020 we started, but 2021 was this particular conference. And in 2018, the Farm Act was passed, which legalized hemp and CBD while keeping marijuana illegal. Right.
So okay.
There's a definition of what the difference is, and there's a path and there's a framework. And so we looked at that and said, hey, this is something that we can actually build an entire program around, get the bank behind. We can build compliance. There are platforms and services that can help us, but we can actually address this market.
So this is a new market. It's underserved historically, right? Because this is,
yep.
You know, everyone was hearing about, you know, you had to do cash payments and that. In the marijuana space and stuff like that. And so this was an opportunity you saw that you thought you could tackle because of your special structure, having the bank as a partner. And so you guys went after that as a new opportunity?
Absolutely. And I'm actually make one point of clarity. Historically, before 2014, but definitely before 2018, everyone looked at cannabis, which is the medical term, and marijuana and hemp are these two different cousins as all the same.
Right.
And legally as well as conceptually. So legally that changed in 2018. And mm-hmm. So now you could separate the two and we could actually, you know, bank, provide payments and lend to this, you know, one category, which is hemp and CBD. And on the marijuana side, we could actually bank it, but you can't provide any card processing. So
right.
MasterCard,
and is that still the case today?
It is still the case today.
Okay. So, but you found the area that we could.
Yep, absolutely. It's a narrow path, but it's one that is well-defined. And so we were able to, you know, get the bank behind it, the board, state of Illinois. I was the regulator and everyone said, okay, you know, let, you know, it's here it is. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Good luck.
And were you one of the first banks that was able to provide merchant services for that category?
Yeah, there's been a couple of banks that have been in and out of that space. And it's always interesting, Julian, when anybody gets into a business and gets in with one foot and you can see it, you know it, and then they get out just as easily and you go, okay, well, they set it up so they could get in, make quick cash and leave. We were set up to the level where we actually trademarked certain hemp banks here, hemp pays here. We have all these things, you know, we're the hemp bank. We went in saying, okay, we're all in. We don't do anything, you know, half-assed. And the market looked at us at first and said, okay, we've seen banks do this. Now, mind you, now we're 5 years into this. So we've stayed the course. And so, yes, I'd say we were one of the first banks that actually leaned into this with such intent that it was obvious that we're not going to easily be able to get out of this. And we're offering loans. We were offering full banking services. So
you got a full service offering. This category. So are you one of the leaders in that category now?
I'd say so. I'd say
awesome.
We are.
Awesome. Yeah. So you found an underserved market, changing regulation, and that's one of your keys to your success, would you say?
Absolutely. You know, it's like anything, you know, one of the books that I'm a big fan of is Blue Ocean Strategy. And so one of the things they talk about is, you know, trying to not compete where others are, and certainly
right.
not incumbents and tight markets, but find, you know, niches or, you know, areas of that market where there isn't competition. And it's either because of regulatory, it's either because of some other barrier to entry. In this case, it was regulatory, but then it was also banking and the banks weren't supporting it. So I had two of the tenants covered.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just about getting out in the market and executing, which that part I felt like we have covered from our experience of my 20 years previous.
Well, that's awesome. Well, great. So that's a great story. And you went to an underserved market and really, really innovated there, which is awesome. What were some of the biggest challenges you faced along the journey?
Well, the pandemic was certainly one.
Yeah.
The team is still remote, but it was remote then. We had the plan of putting everyone in Raleigh, which is where the bank corp of this particular bank is. And the conversation I had with the COO was, well, okay, we can move everyone to Raleigh, but they're just going to sit in their apartment anyway. You're never going to see
right.
them.
Yeah, that was black and white. You're not going to the office at that point. Now it's a choice. And so, back then it was.
So yeah. So the other part was the talent, right? And so if we can hire the talent where they are and tell them they don't have to move, and get really high quality people, and not disrupt their lives, and actually not have to have them have a conversation with their other half to say, hey, we're going to move, you know, from wherever we are to Raleigh, North Carolina, which isn't a horrible place, certainly, but you know, it is a transition.
A move is a barrier, right?
Absolutely. And so to continue on that, so the first one was the pandemic. I think we were able to navigate that. And then in 2022, the bank received an unsolicited bid to be acquired by another bank that I actually was one of the banks, Julian, that I happened to approach with this idea back in 2019.
Back at the beginning, okay.
Yeah. So and they didn't approach through me. They just found us through an investment banker. So it's incredibly, I would say serendipitous, but it wasn't positive for me. So I won't say that, use that word.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, guys, these are not people that understand, you know, our business, would support it. And they said, no, it'd be great. We'll just, you know, we'll have the acquisition and then we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out afterwards. That puts you at risk. Because like,
listen, you know how this world works.
That's a potentially death threat for your business, right? Because you don't know if that partner is going to want to do it.
Exactly. If the regulatory environment changes or your partner changes, which is in this case what's going to, then you know, everything gets put back to zero and you have to kind of figure it out again. And so we realized that. And luckily, I was able to convince the bank to say, hey, look, you know, your equity is at jeopardy. Your investment's at jeopardy. Can we pull that out? And maybe find another bank partner that is willing to, you know, buy you out, do whatever, and is still going to continue to support us because they see the opportunity. And so we went through a process at about 13 banks bet on us, some household names that everyone would know. We had kissed a couple frogs through that process, and then we ended up finding Dart Bank. And Dart Bank is a 100-year-old Michigan state chartered bank. And they were one of the first banks in Michigan to openly bank and support the marijuana industry. And so we felt, okay, if you're going to support the marijuana industry, then the hemp and CBD industry is a lower bar, both compliance and certainly regulatory. So, and honestly, the thing that really impressed me the most, Julian, and I know this is such a trite thing to hear, but as I heard the CEO telling me about the culture and how they manage the bank and how they look at themselves as entrepreneurs, you know, living in a community bank, I said, okay, those are our people.
And that resonated with you as an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Because if they don't have that culture and they aren't strong in following through on promises they make to their team and or the community they serve, then I'm at risk. There's no doubt, right? We'll be disintermediated. Because we're not part of that community.
Yeah,
we're coming in,
sure,
you know, as an acquisition. So, but we closed that in June of 2023. And in that process, I'll tell you, that was the biggest challenge, Julian. It was keeping the team focused and continue to execute, because as you're going through an acquisition, you can't lose your key people, and you certainly can't lose key customers and partners, or else, you know, then the question becomes, you know, what am I buying?
Sure.
And that's
right. So you got to keep your team together. There's uncertainty. You've lost your key partner. How did you do that? And you're not in the same office, so you know that creates even more challenge with creating trust and culture, right?
And I'll tell you what's even more interesting is there are some of the team members on the on our team, a small team, that I've never met in person. I've only talked to them through video calls, because again, during that time, folks didn't get together. And so what we did was, well, what I decided to do was be incredibly transparent and communicate regularly. So we had a weekly meeting where all we did was update on where we are. And so, as I mentioned, we kissed some frogs. We had some LOIs that fell out for various reasons. You know, one of which, just to be really transparent here, was because my compensation package, they started retrading it through the process to the point where I realized, okay, we're not gonna do well if this is how you're handling
me. You're starting at the beginning,
What's next? So we ended up, you know, blowing that up, unfortunately, you know, really close to the closing deadline, and that was a challenge because I had to. You know, really, I had to tell them, hey, look, I killed the deal because, you know, they weren't treating me fairly. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a moment where you don't know how they're going to react. But because we were so consistent in our communication, they agreed. They said, you know what, that's not good.
They've
we don't
been
want
your
that.
Employees. So you're sharing something as personal as that with your employees and being very transparent.
Yeah. And that was, you know, it's a risk. But I also thought, okay, listen, if this is going to work, we have to have trust.
Right.
And if you don't have trust, especially in a remote environment, you really have nothing. And I needed them because they're the business. You know, yes, I lead it, but they're the business. They drive it. They talk to the customers every day. And so that was the other thing. So everyone came over with us, and all our merchants moved over with us. Our partners moved over with us. And you can ask them today. They don't even know when we switched because they didn't feel
anything. It was that seamless.
Yeah. You know, and it was only that seamless because the team was so dedicated to this. Biggest thing I learned is that, okay, the most uncomfortable things are, if they're the right thing, it's the thing you have to do. And by doing that, we've created a tremendous culture inside our group. And then once we came over to the bank, we realized they had a very similar culture. And so it became an incredibly easy transition, really easy.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Well, congratulations on bringing your team through that transition and getting through. So that's awesome. So that's some key challenges. Now you're on the other side of it. I'm sure you've got some blue horizon in front of you or some excitement. Oh. But looking back over the 4-year journey, what would you do differently? Any lessons for others who are maybe in year one or two?
Yeah, I would say, gosh, the biggest thing I probably would do differently today, if I was starting right now, is I would embrace technology earlier and leverage it into the business sooner, even though, you know, and again, at that time, technology was very expensive, right? So you had to build everything from scratch.
Yeah, it's gotten cheaper in over those 4 years.
Absolutely. You know, AI is definitely a game changer. It would have been for us if it was available at the level it is today.
Are you bringing it in now?
We're attempting to. So the interesting thing is now that we're part of a community bank, AI needs data. And so the data you feed into it, it uses. And of course, depending on how how it's structured, you may be making some of that data public or being used in other models, which of course becomes a real challenge. It's again, you know, personal information, especially coming from a community bank, is absolutely
you gotta
not
be very
to be
careful.
Sure.
So you got to be careful what you use AI for.
We're navigating those challenges.
Sure.
Yeah. But we will. We're absolutely going to leverage it because there are a lot of repetitive tasks in payments and banking that can easily be automated and leverage AI to be more effective. And that's, you know, ultimately any small business, which I still consider us a small business, even though we're now part of a bank, has to look at how you can become more efficient, more effective. And technology is definitely the answer for us. So I would have leveraged that earlier, and that would allow us to grow faster, maybe had a little bit better of a story to tell as we went to market, because, you know, we're only 2 years in. And so we didn't have the, you know, the growth stats and the, you couldn't draw the beautiful curves where everything goes up to the right just yet. And so, you know, there was a leap of faith by the bank to see us as a viable acquisition that has the ability to be self-sustaining, which we are now.
Well, congratulations on that journey. You know, as you think back on that, your career, and you reflect on your lessons, you mentioned Blue Ocean Strategy as a really good reference. You know, what else do you have other books or podcasts or things you listen to that you'd recommend to our audience?
Sure, absolutely. You know, and this is not a book I grew up with, but it's an oldie and a goodie. How to Win Friends and Influence People is a great lesson in just how to meet people where they are and just, you know, not in a fake manner, but in really like engaging manner, how to connect with folks. I love the How I Built This podcast. It certainly helped me through, you know, our trials and tribulations in the first couple of years. And I love about it is that, you know, you hear these stories of these household brands and you think, wow, it was so easy for them to start. And then you hear these stories of how their near-death experiences, all this chaos, and you sit there and say, okay, you know what? They did it. We can do it. Let's, you know, we can show some grit. We can be persistent and we'll get there. And so that always, that was helpful. And there's also just some fun stories. And then, the AI challenge. And so we've been listening. A mutual friend of ours has introduced me to a handful of really great AI related podcasts that break it down to the average person, which I think I am. I'm certainly no data scientist. But I know that there are, you know, incremental gains to be had if we can leverage it properly, and we just have to figure out what that is.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're all studying right now, trying to figure out how we can leverage it. What's the name of that podcast? Is that the Artificial Intelligence Show?
I'll find it. I, okay. I'm blanking on it right now. Sorry.
Awesome. Well, Tom, thanks so much for spending some time with us this morning and sharing your story. Congratulations. And wish you the best in the future.
Well, we really appreciate you having us or having me and being able to tell the Westtown Payments story as well as, you know, my personal story.
That's awesome, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Julian. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you please follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast player? And we'd be grateful if you recommend it to a friend. If you'd like more resources on how to become a better leader in business, we invite you to visit us at growthelevated.com. We'll be back next week with more insight from another great tech leader. Thank you.